want to begin by thanking the chamber choir for that song. I couldn't help but think of Daphne Dunbar and having spent her dying moments with her this week, hearing you sing, Sing Me to Heaven. So thank you for that. This morning's reading, befitting all of that, is in a simple, lovely poem entitled My Father Dying by Joyce Sutphin. It was hard work, dying. Harder than anything he'd ever done. Whatever brutal, bruising, back-breaking chore he'd forced himself to endure, it was nothing compared to this. And it took so long. When would the job be over? Who would call him home for supper? And it was hard for us, his children. All of our lives we'd heard my mother telling us to go out, help your father. But this was work we could not do. He was way out beyond us, in a field we could not reach. Bearing witness. In many ways, you could say that this week prepared me to write this sermon. Truth be told, however, I think you could more fully and truthfully say that my life and ministry up to this point prepared me for this morning. Every time that I have been invited to bear witness or have found myself in a position of being with, accompanying in a deep way, I have felt the power inherent in bearing witness. When we show up for one another, really show up, remarkable things can happen. Not magical or supernatural things, but profound and deep ones. When Melora and I interviewed for this job with the search committee, I preached a sermon for them about a time in my life when I almost didn't show up for a witnessing moment. I wonder if any of them remember it. It was a sermon entitled, The Most Important Things. I had just been deeply moved by the wonderful and amazing book by Joan Didion called The Year of Magical Thinking about the death of her husband. And the sermon was kind of built around Didion's story. But then it wove its way into my story, my busy Washington, D.C., too busy to get down to brass tacks when it came to life and death story. I had gotten a phone call, much like the one I got this Tuesday, telling me that a family friend of my mom's and mine, Bill, was dying. I started to make excuses. I was too busy to go see him. I had things to do, meetings to attend, newsletter columns to write. I was much too important to show up at his bedside. And then I thought, what am I doing? What am I saying? What could be more important than showing up for this man who has showed up so many times for me? And so I put my busyness aside. I put aside my overinflated sense of importance. And I went out to see Bill, and I got to his bedside, and I sat with him, and he looked at me and he said, "This is it, Big S. I really did it this time. I'm not going to make it." And I said goodbye to Bill. And I thought, where else should I have been? What more could I have done than really show up one last time to look him in the eye and say goodbye? And I think of him often, and I think of him still in part because his name is signed on our wedding covenant that hangs on our bedroom wall. There's Bill showing up for me. A dear friend of mine who also happens to be a colleague and I were once talking about marriage. We were talking about what is at the heart of marriage. Why do people do such a crazy thing? Why do we ministers help people do it all the time? And when we show up, what are we hoping for when we officiate a wedding? Why do we bear witness to a covenant between two people? And as we were talking about this, she pointed me toward, of all things, a Hollywood movie for a quotation she thought summed up the essence of marriage quite well. And so it was that I found myself watching the far inferior Americanized version of the much superior Japanese film, Shall We Dance? Look up the original Japanese movie. But Susan Sarandon, we do love her. And her character says this about marriage in Shall We Dance? We need a witness to our lives. There's a billion people on the planet. What does any one life really mean? But in a marriage, you're promising to care about everything. The good things, the bad things, the terrible things, the mundane things, all of it, all of the time, every day. You're saying your life will not go unnoticed. Because I will notice it. Your life will not go unwitnessed because I will be your witness. End quote. Of course, there are actually approximately 7.6 billion people on the planet. And it is more than just in the context of a marriage that one can do something that powerful. But I couldn't agree more that there is deep power in saying your life will not go unnoticed because I will notice it. Your life will not go unwitnessed because I will witness it. In essence, saying, I will be your witness. On Tuesday, I thought I was going to a music committee meeting. I was convinced, because that's what my calendar said I was supposed to do. And then I got a call. I got a call that said it's time to show up for Daphne. To show up for her as she had done as chair of the Care and Concern Committee for so many years. And so I went. And there I was with her daughter and her granddaughter when Daphne took her last breath on Tuesday afternoon. And it's a strange thing, I have to tell you, to get back into your car and go back about your regular day after you've watched someone leave. But there I was, getting in my car, heading back into ordinary time, as it were. And I thought, as I got in my car, about how many people this role of ministry has invited me to witness. How many beginnings, how many struggles in the middle, and how many endings. Just this fall, we and I have borne witness to the loss of Bob Thompson and Doreen Wood, and now Daphne Dunbar. What an honor it has been for me to be a part of all of those. And of course, I thought as I drove my car to pick up my 5-year-old son after saying goodbye to Daphne, life, that it matters not just how we show up in the end, but how we show up all along. Our focus this month, as Doug has mentioned, is interdependence, and few things, it seems to me, get to the heart of our sense of interdependence than the connection we feel when we are with others. Scientific studies are just now catching up with the reality that we have all felt of what happens in our brains when we meditate. Or what happens to patients in a hospital who have been prayed over or prayed for. Miraculous things happen, not in that sense that somebody prayed and then somebody got better. I can hear all the humanists out there now getting a little itchy. But in the sense that it matters that people think of us. Regardless of what you believe theologically, it matters that people think of us. It matters that people care about how we're doing. So I hope you won't be offended when you tell me you're struggling and I tell you I will pray for you. Because I do. And because I think it matters. That when people care for us, sometimes it can quite literally save our lives. And in the very least, it can make us feel less lonely and less unique in our struggles. Even when it doesn't save us, it certainly makes a difference. To feel less lonely in your stress, two things help, writes Stanford psychologist Kelly McGonigal. The first is to increase your awareness of other people's suffering. The second is to be more open about yours. In her beautiful book, Marrow, Elizabeth Lesser speaks about our connection to one another as she reflects on being a bone marrow donor for her sister. She writes, and I quote, "We are made of the same stuff, the same elements, the same molecules. You don't have to go through a bone marrow transplant for this to be true with all your relations, colleagues, friends, even those you may call enemies." She goes on, "Thomas Merton said that as he grew older, he realized it was not ideas that changed the world, but simple gestures of love given to the people around you, and sometimes those you feel most at odds with." He wrote that in order to save the world, you must serve the people in your life. You gradually struggle less and less for an idea, Merton wrote, and more for specific people. In the end, it is the reality of personal relationship that saves everything. End quote. Lesser goes on to muse about how she has come to see our human condition and our connectedness as much like a phrase that she heard over and over again at food carts in Thailand. Same, same, but different. She describes in the book how she would go to a food cart and she'd say, "Is that mango or papaya?" And they'd say, "Same, same, but different." "Is it chicken or shrimp?" "Same, same, but different." So finally, she said, "We human beings, our human condition, our connectedness is same, same, but different. That we individuals have our differences and our uniquenesses, and yet some fundamental similarity that we remember well when we bear witness. and that when we remember it well, could serve as a saving grace. She concludes her same but different chapter by simply stating, "We are individual selves, each with a unique purpose to be discovered and expressed, and we are threads in a tapestry beyond our imagining." In the end, my friends, I have begun to wonder if we have anything else to give other than bearing witness. What matters more, really? Showing up with one's presence to say, "I see your life in all of its complexity and uniqueness as connected to all of life and to me. I am here because you matter to me. I see you. I am here. I am with you." What a gift that is to offer. I'm not sure that there is a better one. Our full presence and attention, not judging, not advising, not trying to fix, not trying to be better, not with ego, just showing up. "I see you. You matter to me. I am bearing witness to your life. Your life will not go unnoticed." So much power in that. When we do that, something remarkable happens, it seems to me. We are both a mirror for that person so that that person can see themselves reflected in our eyes. And we are also a touchstone, reminding them of their company, reminding them of their place in this vast, vast whole universe. In our runabout, materialistic, individualistic world, it is no small thing to show up and say, "There's nothing more important than you, right here, right now." There's a gospel song. Yeah, I'm gonna go there. There's a gospel song. There's a gospel song entitled, "Somebody Prayed for Me." Dorothy Norwood wrote it, and she performs it with the Georgia Mass Choir, and all kinds of things happen. But I don't know if you've noticed this about gospel songs, but I sure have, that with gospel music, you don't need to agree with the theology of the song to find it emotionally resonant and deeply moving. Gospel music often brings me to tears and has nothing to do with whether or not I agree with anything they're singing. And so I sing this song to you, inviting you to adapt it and change it as you want to, but to remind you that this bearing witness has power, so much power that people have written songs about it. So much power that they sing it in a way that makes people cry. And "Somebody Prayed for Me" is about as simple a song as it gets. I mean, there's just a lot of clapping and almost a shouting thing to it. It's not complicated. Just like bearing witness is not complicated. But it makes a huge difference. So then I was there listening to Dorothy Norwood, and she's singing. No, she's not singing. She's singing, right? "Somebody prayed, had me on their mind, took the time and prayed for me." What'd she say? She said, "I'm so glad they prayed, just so glad they prayed. I'm so glad they prayed for me." Right? 'Cause somebody prayed. They had me on their mind.
their mind. And they took the time and they prayed for me. I'm so glad they prayed. Just so glad they prayed. I'm so glad they prayed for me.
Amen.
Amen. So may we each find ways to bear witness to one another's lives. May we take the time. May we have people on our minds. May we love one another as best we can. Because make no mistake, whether in moments of joy or struggle, whether in moments of threshold crossing and everything in between, it matters. It deeply, deeply matters that we say, I see you. Your life means something to me. And it will not go unnoticed. Blessed be, and amen.